Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hello, old friends. I'm Brian Brinkman.
And I'm David Goldstein. It's July 12th, 2021, and you're listening to The Drop.
Welcome, everyone, to the Brian and Dave-led The Drop. This is our first episode together in quite some time, and I am really, really excited to be taking over The Drop. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing pretty well. New York City just experienced some seriously epic rainfalls that turned the subways into canals, but I was indoors, so I was okay, and I echo your enthusiasm. I need Brian Brinkman like the deserts need the rain. So I am happy to be getting back at it, so to say. Plus, our listeners, it's Monday morning. Monday's got to feel. It's that get up and go feel. It's the start of the week. You got to take it by the neck. It's better than Tuesday.
Start of the week, like Kevin Garnett once said, anything is possible. I am thrilled to be hanging out with you, Dave. The desert needs its rain. I live in the drought-infused western United States. However, here in Denver, Colorado, where I'm based, we've gotten an incredible amount of rainfall here in May and June and July thus far this year. It's been an incredibly weird summer. Very, very welcome. We've gone from highs of 107 down to like 68, low 70s. It's been a very strange mix, but on the whole, things are good out here as well. I'm just really excited to be hanging with you, man.
Yeah, the only guarantee for the past few weeks is that we get vicious thunderstorms at night, which ensures that my New York Mets play tons of doubleheaders, and I don't get to watch as much baseball as I would like. Okay,
they're still in first, though, right?
Oh yeah, no, they're four games in first. They're I don't know if they're good so much as the National League East is simply bad, but I'll take it.
Do you think the NL East is bad, or do you think it's just a lot of really similarly talented teams that are all kind of beating the hell out of each other?
Well, the Florida Marlins are certainly bad. They kind of took a step backwards from last year, and every team has injury woes this year. The Atlanta Braves, serious injury woes to their pitching staff. The Nationals can't quite get it together. they had a rough start. No, it's a combination of things. I think you saw with the short injury plague baseball season last year, in the fast ramp up, you're having more pulled hammies, more people hurting themselves on the base path. So every team has their foibles, but the New York Mets have excelled because their starting pitching is exceptionally good.
Yeah, I've enjoyed watching the Mets. We've played them twice. I'm a Cubs fan for all you listeners out there. We're having a very difficult season. It was a glorious, beautiful, unexpected season where we were, I think at one point, a high of 9 or 10 games over 500. We were in first place. We were battling with the Brewers, swept the Cardinals at home, and then we lost 11 in a row following a combined no-hitter. And that combined no-hitter featured our starter and our two setup guys plus Kimbrel, our closer, which was really just like a showcase of everything that's been great for the Cubs. But here we are, mid-July. I'm expecting a huge sell-off. So baseball is about to go back to 2014 in my neck of the woods.
So before we get going too much, we got some thank yous that we got to do, correct?
Yeah, so this is, like we said at the top, this is our first time hosting The Drop here. You may remember us from the Beyond the Pond podcast. You may have heard us on the Undermine podcast. We'll get into all of that, kind of where that fits into what we're doing now. But we wanted to thank a couple of people who have made this venture possible. First and foremost, I think he resents the name, but I'm going to give it to him anyway, the podfather himself, RJB, the CEO of Osiris Media. He launched and hosted The Drop for, I think, about 2 years, 2.5 years. Started having me on back in the fall. Dave and I came on a couple of times to do what we called at that point weekend spins, where we would recommend albums for you to listen to. He has graciously handed us the reins of The Drop to do what we will with it. We're very excited, but much love to RJ. Who else do we got, Dave?
We also really want to thank Amar Sastry, who's responsible for our most excellent Zuma-era Neil Young-style theme song, which I hear it in my dreams. I just think it sounds fantastic.
Absolutely. Last person we want to thank is the Osiris Media social media guru. He is anonymous to us, anonymous to you, but he is a wonderful human being who will be promoting this episode, commenting on The Drop as we go live here. We may start to do some more stuff on Twitter, but for the time being, we've got the voice of Osiris pushing us out into the world. So we're really excited and really thankful for that. Dave, the last time we recorded a Beyond the Pond episode, it was December 2020. Cases were on the rise. I don't think either of us had travel plans. There was no fish over New Year's. We were staring down a very bleak winter. We just won an election, but had no idea the continued horrors that the former president would have in store. Lots happened since then. What have you been up to since the last time that we recorded together as Beyond the Pond?
Well, some of you realize that when I'm not doing podcasts, I have my own law practice, so that always takes up a good deal of time. Got two daughters, 6 and 2, so the youngest turned 2 in May, so there's been a lot of shepherding them off to daycare and elementary school. But also, you know, certainly you can find this both on season 1 of the Undermine podcast, in which I think we sort of took over, I want to say, was it 3 episodes?
Yeah, we did 3 episodes covering David Bowie from August 29th, 1987, the Mike song from August 3rd, 1988, and the Whipping Post jam from November 23rd, 1985. 3 seminal moments.
Right, the epic Whipping Post jam from the sculpture room at Goddard College. So, right, we've been doing that. If you haven't listened to season 1 of Undermine yet, don't fool yourself. It's fantastic. That came out great for everyone involved. And we're also hard at work on season 2, which is going to be significantly different from season 1, though no less awesome. So I know, Brian, you've had some very significant life changes.
I have. Yeah. When we last recorded, my wife was very pregnant and very gracious with time to allow me to continue recording podcasts and doing fun stuff like this. And then about a month later, we had a baby, and we had a beautiful daughter, Ingrid Joyce Brinkman. She came along one day before her due date. She has a palindrome birthday, January 23rd, 2021, which is something that my son, Wallace, loves to tell her and tell everyone about. But she's been great. Second child, she sleeps well. She's super adorable. She's just starting to become like really active with her mind in terms of like sitting up, grabbing for things, putting everything in her mouth to make sure that it's okay. And it's getting real. Like we actually now feel like we have two kids in the house, not just like one baby in your arms and one kid. It's a little bit strange. It's an evolving kind of learning experience for us.
I'll say, yeah, it's the learning experience does continue to evolve. The two-year-old now, she's got a lot more words. She's at the phase where she loves punching buttons, whether it's buttons on the elevator, buttons at the crosswalk. When we let her watch television, which is pretty often, actually, she has to be the one to press the remote control to turn it off. It's all about control. But that's good, because it means she's active and she's into it. So one good thing is, at least I know at this time, rock shows have come back and happen to be coming back. I just wantonly bought tons of tickets to stuff in the fall. I wasn't even paying attention to the dates. I'm seeing like 17 shows in September if those end up going forward. Have you seen anything? Like, what's upcoming for you?
So as of recording right now, I'm going to see my first concerts since COVID hit. I'm going to see Two Nights of Goose here in Denver. I'm incredibly excited about this.
Wait, two nights?
Two nights. Ooh. The 9th and 10th. Hardcore. Yeah, I'm doing a... Yeah, I just decided I'm going to jump back in as intensely as possible. Dave, you and I share a lengthy Twitter thread, Twitter DM thread, I don't know how you'd even call it, with our buddy Josh Carver, Nola Sox. Big shout out to him. Huge friend of the pod. And we collectively talk everything from music to baseball to politics to kids to good restaurants. Shoot the shit.
Lately, it's been about 75% Goose.
Lately, it's been about 75% Goose. And I've been going through, I've listened to every show from the fall last year and from this spring/summer tour, kind of putting together my favorite jams, favorite moments. I'm really excited about this, man. Goose, I talked about them a little bit towards the tail end of Beyond the Pond. Like, I think we're on the same page with this. They really attacked 2020 in a very unique way that like a band at their level could and a band with their resources could. And I was really intrigued by how they approached playing shows. And so I got to hear a lot of them last year, which was very different from a lot of other bands who kind of had to put things on pause for the time being, understandably. But also there's this melody and hose type of jamming in Goose that really harkens back to early 90s Phish for me in a lot of ways. And this spring tour that they're on, spring summer tour, they're starting to explore like minimalism, and they're starting to explore kind of this darker side to their music, and they're kind of going on the other side of a peak. And I really find that part interesting. So I'm really excited for the shows. I'll be able to talk a little bit more in depth about them in episode two, but I can't wait. I get to those two shows. And then I've got confirmed right now, three Phish shows. I'm going to see the Dicks Run at the end of September or end of August, early September, but I'm trying really hard right now to get to Tahoe. I would love to do a solo Tahoe trip.
So I've actually, at this point, I've seen four shows. I kind of,
okay.
My vaccine, my COVID antibodies were working overtime in June. I got that vaccination. And I said, all right, let's get it on. So the first show I saw back, I saw Garcia Peoples, obviously a band that we talked a lot about on Beyond the Pond. They have a new album coming out in the fall, I want to say. And yeah, that was the first show back. That was great. They clearly had been practicing. They played a whole bunch of new songs. I, too, saw a Goose concert in New Haven, Connecticut, about 17 minutes from where my parents live. So I slept with my parents that night. I felt like I was 16 years old because I drove from my parents' house, and they're like, what's the name of that band you're seeing tonight? What's the name of that band? I'm like, Goose. Like, oh, okay. And I knew my mom would stay up until I got home, and despite being a 41-year-old man, and that's exactly what happened. And yeah, that show was pretty great. I agree that they're at a place where the songwriting is coming along. They definitely have a lot of good songs. Sometimes I wish they would place more of an emphasis on the song craft, because they can actually write good songs and they can sing. But the jamming is developing, I think, in a good way, in that it used to be, for me, the problem with Goose was every single song ended like at breakneck pace, like, I guess, Moe playing Recreational Chemistry. Everything was like a million miles an hour. And I think they're starting to come around to the fact that not every jam has to end at a million miles an hour. They can do certain things with it. They can slow it down. They're really good at changing keys. But yeah, they're a very good band. That show was a lot of fun. I saw a show at a tiny venue on Avenue C in my neighborhood called New Blue. This was the saxophonist Stuart Bogey with Riley Walker on guitar and Spencer Zahn on bass and the drummer from Antibolus, whose name I forget. That was a pretty enclosed space. That was people had their masks off because allegedly everybody was vaccinated. That was awesome and felt really good. And I saw Trey Anastasio at the Beacon. That was a phenomenal, like, cathartic experience. I sat next to two fish heads who had to be in their early 60s. The woman had, like, this awesome patchwork quilt, and I was talking to her about fish. And then when he took the stage to Everything's Right, that is probably the first and last time that I will openly weep at hearing Everything's Right. It was quite a phenomenal evening of music. And I have tickets to see Fish in Nashville. I'm still not entirely decided if I'm going to go. I'm going to, check the news, see what's happening with the COVID variants, because I have kids that can't be vaccinated. But so that's where we're standing right now. In any event, I think mentally a far better spot than I was in July of 2020.
Yeah, a lot more hope, a lot more, I don't know, I think things are looking better. I feel certainly better about the state of the world right now in a lot of ways. It's been an intense year and a half, and I was very grateful to have 2020 as a year to record with you, Dave, and for us to start a new project. I'm really excited now that things are looking brighter, things are looking better, that we're starting a new one here. And why don't we jump into this here? We wanted to use our kind of introduction first episode here with you all to kind of give an overview of what we're going to be bringing to the table with the drop, what our intentions are, as well as kind of go through what we've been listening to lately, what has been kind of perking our ears up. This show will be quite a bit different from Beyond the Pond, but will include some elements that we both loved about Beyond the Pond, namely, We're utilizing the majority of what we do on Undermine to focus on our fish content. What we're kind of going to use with this show is an opportunity for us to just kind of get into our own heads from a musical standpoint. What are we listening to? What's really percolating up in our brains? What are we challenging ourselves to kind of understand? What discographical deep dives are we going down? But we also want to use this as a platform to really showcase what's going well here at Osiris Media. There's a lot of great podcasts that are being showcased. So we're going to highlight a few of our favorite episodes each week that we really think you all should be listening to, as well as we're going to do some interviews over the next couple of weeks with hosts from Osiris so that you all can meet them in a little bit more of a casual setting and hopefully walk away with a new podcast or two to listen to.
Yeah, we're going to do all that and more. There'll be some discographical deep dives, new album recommendations, classic album recommendations. We're going to talk about even silly things like where the YouTube algorithm takes us. There's going to be some fun digressions. But in terms of discussing some big releases in the Osiris network, I could lead off. I just want to talk about a podcast that I'm sure many of you have already listened to, but if you haven't, then my God, once you finish this one, you got to get started right away. That is Alive Again. That is the Trey Anastasio podcast, basically, where Trey kind of traces his history with the Trey Anastasio band, his history with his solo works, including things like Broadway, Hands on a Hard Body, Ghost of the Forest, his orchestral works, just like anything that Trey has done kind of outside the confines of Fish. It was four episodes. Episode number four dropped this past week. It's a combination. It's mostly interviews, kind of where Trey is the ultimate narrator, and the interviews, it's everyone from most members of the Trey Anastasio band, his collaborator in terms of orchestral stuff, Don Hart, just kind of all things Trey. I've been following Fish for 27 years, and I would mostly listen to Alive Again in my short commute because it takes me like 15 minutes to walk my daughter down to daycare and then 15 minutes back, and I'd just be stopped in my tracks saying, no fucking way. No fucking way. No fucking way. I think they pulled from over 10 hours of interview with Trey, and just the level of depth and the Easter eggs and the overall level of production was just extremely impressive. And even having followed Fish as long as I have, I look forward to it because I learned something new in each and every episode. Extremely impressive achievement. I know certainly we're working with some of these guys. I know Matt Dwyer, our buddy, had a huge hand in it. He's doing like a lot of work at Undermine Season 2. Obviously, RJB had a big hand in it. Jesse Jarnow, Eric Renner-Brown. It's a phenomenal piece of work, and I think you should really check it out if you haven't already.
I second everything that you just said. Shout out to all of our close friends who worked on this. Matt Dwyer, huge shout out from a personal standpoint. I've learned so much over the last couple of years from an editing standpoint. Been able to take a few leaps myself with that side of kind of the podcasting world, and he did an amazing job. You know, I think the biggest thing that struck me is I have always been curious about the years 2002 to 2007 for Trey. They were very challenging years for him personally. Musically, there's a lot of highs, there are some lows, but there's a lot of really interesting music that was made within there. To hear Trey talk so vulnerably and openly about his experiences, that distance between what he went through, where he's at now, how he looks back on himself then, how he feels like he's learned from that period, how he almost in some cases feels like he needed to go through something like that to get the perspective he has, but still like in his voice, the pain when he thinks back on some of those memories, it was enlightening for me. I felt like very emotional when listening to it. I would listen to it when I was on runs, and there were times I just like stopped and either had like a shit-eating grin or just was like, you know, deep breaths trying to figure out, you know, how to process this stuff. I mean, I'm not unique in this standpoint. Trey is a personal hero of mine, a huge inspiration from a creative standpoint, from just like a life approach standpoint, and to hear him go on personally was incredible. You referenced this earlier. I will never listen to Everything's Right the same way again, and same goes for Time Turns Elastic.
Yes,
those two songs. Yes. Him talking about the way that he wrote Time Turns Elastic in various keys, various tunings, just to like challenge himself and then realize that that was why it was so challenging and so difficult for Fish to play it, gave me totally new appreciation for that song. And then hearing him go through slamming cabinet doors, banging on the countertop, telling Tom to like be bold, be open, and like those lyrics came out of Tom. I'll never hear that song the same way again. I've always loved it, but like that just cracked open in my head like a new way to think about it.
Certainly hearing Split Open and Melt played on piano from his frequent collaborator, Jeff Tansky, yeah, from the original Split Open and Melt sheet music blew my head into a million pieces.
What else have you been listening to here from Osiris?
So this just dropped yesterday. This was the first episode of the Osiris podcast called Festival Circuit, which each season explores a different American music festival. I know season one did a really excellent deep dive into the New Orleans Jazz Festival, and season two is all about the Newport Folk Festival. And I listened to episode one. It's an elegant podcast. It feels like you're listening to something that could be on NPR. It's just very pleasant, very well drawn out, and it has several interviews with the participants of the Newport Folk Fest, people that have worked at the Newport Folk Fest, founder George Ween, the Newport Folk Fest. He's getting up there in years, is still extremely lucid. He had some good things to say. The first two episodes of that were released. I want to say we're recording this on a Thursday. I think they came out yesterday on Wednesday. And that's just an enjoyable, elegant podcast to listen to in the hot summer.
Yeah, it's an outstanding series. I dove into the New Orleans Jazz Fest one that came out in last summer, 2020, and I'm really excited to dive into the Folk Fest. Another one I want to highlight, Late Era is about to wrap up their second season. If you haven't listened to Late Era and you were listening to The Drop, Late Era is one of those podcasts that you should be listening to right when this episode finishes and be diving through. It's hosted by Sam Sadomski, Winston Cook Wilson, and Andy Cush. All are great music writers. All are musicians themselves. Winston put out one of my favorite records of 2020. Andy Cush is in Garcia Peoples, one of our favorite bands. And Sam records
The Bird Calls.
The Bird Calls. Thank you. Really amazing singer-songwriter stuff. All great dudes. Late Era succinctly is a podcast about late era records by some of your favorite artists. So you think about the big albums that came out from your favorite artists, fast forward 15, 20 years to when they were no longer cool. They were a little bit doughy around the waist. They were writing about, you know, domesticity and domestic strife and maybe financial issues, shifting perspectives on spirituality and religion and life and so many different fascinating themes that don't really connect when you're releasing your first records in your 20s and early 30s. They are equal parts praiseworthy of certain artists, and they are also brutally honest when they don't like a record. The last one that came out a week and a half ago, I want to say, was Kate Bush's Ariel. It's a lush, beautiful record. It came out in 2005. It documents Kate Bush becoming a mom, having her son, who's become a collaborator of hers. It is a really just gorgeous, thoughtful, wild record. I have listened to it a bunch ever since this episode. I highly recommend this episode as well as their upcoming season finale, which I can tell you already is going to be about as nasty of a late era episode as there's ever been, covering Eric Clapton's Pilgrim.
Nastier than the Van Morrison episode?
Not as bad as that, but I mean, I think Clapton has earned their hate in a similar manner to Van Morrison. He's not as, it's not as sloppy conspiracy theorist, but it's kind of, it's more effective conspiracy theory from Clapton because he sounds so normal.
More conspiracy theory light. It's kind of like he doesn't have the ability to go the full Van Morrison.
No, he doesn't have the excuse of like being kind of wild. Like he never had a caravan at the last waltz moment in his life, but he's definitely like, you can tell something's gotten into his brain and is starting to rot it in terms of his perspective on society and the world. So I am really excited to hear this episode. Pilgrim was a big record when I was, I think, a teenager, and I remember hearing it for the first time and being like, what the fuck is this? Why is every dad that's just about to turn 40 obsessed with this record right now?
I think it's still got 4 stars from Rolling Stone because, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that Songs of Innocence got named #1 album of the year by Rolling Stone as well, so... But what else do we got? We're going to do a couple of these each week. What else do you want to recommend?
So last one we're talking about this week is it's an Osiris podcast called Trick Bag. And this is a podcast hosted by a guy named Neil the Night Howler, which really focuses on the music of New Orleans. And the most recent episode features lots of unreleased songs from New Orleans, and I want to say the mid-1950s. Is that correct?
Yeah, mid-1950s. I think he dips back into the 40s and goes as far as like the late 1960s garage rock.
It's a wellspring of very interesting, in this case, unreleased music from a part of the country that's generally known for fantastic music, being New Orleans. It gets really deep. This one certainly in particular does.
Yeah, this show to me, man, I wish there were more podcasts like this. And the only podcasts I can really relate it to are, from a stylistic standpoint, a podcast that used to be on Osiris Media, Jesse Jarno's Alternate Roots, as well as a podcast, one of my favorite podcasts I've ever listened to, Range and Basin over on Aquarium Drunkard by Jason P. Woodbury. And I only equate it to those two because this has a true radio show feel. And it has a true radio show feel in the sense that you feel like you're in the car flipping channels on a road trip and you come across this, and you may not know any of these artists, you may not know any of these songs, but instantly sonically you're pulled in. And for at least an hour there on the road, it's got you, and it's got you the whole way. So I cannot recommend this enough. There's not enough music driven podcasts. There's a lot of music commentary podcasts, but like music driven podcasts, this is a really great one. So highly recommend Trick Bag. So we're going to transition quick. It's the middle of July. And if you listen to Beyond the Pond for the last 4 years, you would have known that around this time we would release our top albums of the year so far. That did not happen this year because we are no longer doing Beyond the Pond. However, you might have noticed on our Twitter account that we still use every so often, kind of brush the dust off of. We listed our top albums of the year thus far, but we want to kind of dive in a little bit deeper on this just to give you some background in terms of where we're at with some of these records and give us kind of a point to look back on when we get to December when we rate our top albums of the year at that point. So, Dave, why don't you give us a quick rundown here? What are your 10 through 6 favorite records of the year thus far?
Okay. I have at number 10, Cassandra Jenkins, An Overview on Phenomenal Nature. Number 9, The Hold Steady, Open Door Policy. Number 8, John Andrews and the Yawns, Cookbook. John Andrews used to play drums in the Massachusetts kind of psych folk band Quilt. Number 7, Silver Synthetic, a self-titled record. Number 6, Anna Fox Wroczynski, Cherry, and she sang lead vocals in that Massachusetts psych folk band Quilt. What do you have for your 10 through 6, Brian?
So I've got, first and foremost, I love off of your list. These did not make mine, but the Cassandra Jenkins and the John Andrews and the Yawns, those have got a lot of spins, and those, I don't know if they'll be in my 11 through 15 or where they'll be at this point in the time, but those are some of my favorite records of the year that, as we both know, our top 10 lists tend to expand into a top 25, top 30, top 40 by year end. So those will be on my list. My number 10 was my first favorite record of the year, Kasper Clausen's Better Way. Dave turned me on to it. With listeners out there, if you ever want to get me to listen to a record, say this sounds like U2 pop in any sort of way whatsoever, and I will listen to it immediately. Dave sent that to me, the opening track, which I believe is a title track, sounds like U2 pop outtake, and I was immediately blown away by the record. 9, Japanese Breakfast, Jubilee. I kind of can't stop listening to this album. I think it'll probably jump higher. 8, Yasmin Williams, Urban Driftwood. Just gorgeous, gorgeous record. 7, Floating Points, Pharoah Sanders, and I believe the London Philharmonic.
Yeah.
Promises. And number 6, Israel Nash, Topaz. Major, major War on Drugs, Tim Showalter vibes on that record. I've been digging that. That is a great summertime grilling album.
Yeah, that Israel Nash record, it's probably the best thing he's put out. I mean, my knock on Israel Nash has always been that in the past, he's got one amazing song that he just beats to death. But Topaz is the first one where he actually changes it up while still doing the heavily produced kind of folk shoegaze thing, but there's more styles. Definitely is one that's kind of certainly more built to last.
It's a record. It's like a long play. You put it on and it ends and you want to play it again. It's the whole album experience. Right.
So briefly, my top 5, number 5, the Danish trio Papir. Album's called Jams. And that's basically what it delivers. Imagine Jane's Addiction as a shoegaze band and without Perry Farrell's vocals. And that gets a bit samey, but it's a really good samey. Like on the first song, when the drums kick in, I'm like 5 feet off the ground. So if you if you want jams, it delivers jams. Number 4, Matt Sweeney and Bonnie Prince Billy, Super Wolves. Number 3, our buddy Riley Walker, Chorus and Fable. It sounds like a mid-70s Genesis record combined with late 90s like Chicago post-rock. I think that's what he was trying for, and it accomplishes that just beautifully. The John McIntyre production, it kind of sounds like the Sea and Cake trying to play Genesis. It's awesome. Number 2, Mdou Mokhtar, Afrique Victime, the Guitar Hero album of the year so far. And my number 1 so far is the band Ice Age. Album is called Seek Shelter. I've expressed my love for Ice Age in the past. Angry, Angry Men from Denmark. And I think with each album, they kind of inch a bit closer to becoming like the next best in the young Nick Cave. And they don't miss. Not everybody likes Ice Age, but those who like them a lot. And I just think they're a very inventive, gothic art rock band. So...
Yeah, I would say that they are your wheelhouse. Whenever I listen to them, I think David Goldstein. I think drinking beers with David Goldstein. That is as David Goldstein as it gets.
I say it isn't. They're not a beer drinking band. They're more of like a smoking cloves band.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I guess I just mean more drinking beers with you.
Okay.
You know, it's got a vibe to it that feels like hanging out at a bar, ordering another stout. Talking baseball with you. I don't know. That's my take from it. It drips David Goldstein. So my number five.
The new Ice Age record, it drips David Goldstein.
I think that should be part of the marketing campaign. My number five is your number two, Mdou Mokhtar, Afrik Victime. Guitar Hero record. I've loved everything from the band Tianarin, and this reminds me of that in a lot of cases, that kind of Saharan guitar riffage and guitar heroism. I'm going to see Mdou Mokhtar in September.
Me too.
With my brother and one of my buddies, Ryan Smith, who's probably listening to this, huge friend of the pod. We're going to see him at his band at Globe Hall here in Denver, which is my favorite venue to see anyone in Denver. It's good barbecue, super small. I saw some of my favorite pre-pandemic shows there, including Strand of Oaks, Low, and a bunch of Future Bird shows, one where they played Powderfinger, which is like the song I'm eternally chasing in life. Number four, Natural Information Society, Dissension. Man, a spiral of repetition and noise and melody and weird atonal riffs. It's killer, killer stuff. Number three, The Weather Station, Ignorance. This record was another early favorite of mine. Really good record. Yeah, just stunning lyrics about climate change on top of kind of this subtly nuanced electronic folk music. I really dig it. Two, the lead singer of Wand put out a record, Corey Hansen, Pale Horse Rider, which anyone I've recommended it to, their initial reaction has been, I love this record, but I can't figure out why. And that's kind of been my appeal, is every time I listen to it, it's a similar feel I get every time I listen to Wand, is I get lost in the music. I like everything I hear, but like when I take a step back, I can't structurally put together any of the songs. So every time you re-listen, it feels like a surprise. And I absolutely love that about it. And then my number one is one of my favorite singer-songwriters, one of my favorite guitarists, one of my favorite people making music, Riley Walker's Course in Fable. This is just such an accomplishment. You said it yourself. I mean, he's working with his heroes here. He's working with some of our favorite people. Ryan Jewell plays drums across the whole record. Riley Walker is one of the best guitarists in indie rock and in music. He's a really fascinating songwriter. And yeah, he takes his influences as well as like this very curious and unique way that his brain puts together songs and melodies and experimentations that to this point had really come out mainly in jams, put out some of my favorite jams in some of his live shows over the last couple of years. Shout out to 92918 from Fort Collins. Amazing, amazing show. Some of my favorite indie jams that I've heard over the last couple of years. All that's like recorded here and put in a song, and I just love it. I can't get enough of this record. So we'll see where it ends up. I don't know what the back half of 2021 is going to feel like. The front half has felt like a lot of records that lingered through the tail end of COVID, and then like that Japanese Breakfast record, for example, she held that record until the tail end of COVID to put it out and give people something to think about once COVID had kind of receded from the States. It'll be interesting to see who's been recording records here in the first half of 2021 that will be released in the second half. I don't know how it's going to change our list, but we'll see.
So transitioning from our top 10 list, we just wanted to give you some other new album recommendations and things we've been digging up to this point. So in terms of one new record that I have been playing the heck out of recently, it's a Philadelphia-based artist named Rosalie Middleman, who just goes by the name Rosalie. She put out a record this past May called No Medium. It's her third album as a solo artist. And probably the best way I could describe it would be hazy country shoegaze. She has a beautiful voice. And the band consists of the dudes who make up David Nance's band. Of course, David Nance being the Oklahoma rock and roll wild man. So the music kind of ends up sounding almost like a combination of what like Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers almost meets like a Mazzy Star. And it's just these thick, gorgeous patterns of sound over her vocals. And she doesn't forget to bring the hooks. And it's just a really well done, very elegant record. She's quite the guitar shredder. She also recently put out a record under the name Monocot that I think is out on the Feeding Tube label. That's her and the drummer Jason Garris, best known for playing with Cloud Nothing. That's just this like blown out, crazy horse style like guitar record that doesn't have a ton in common with No Medium except that they're both awesome. So if you want to hear an amazing blown out guitar record, check out Monocot, but also for a really well done country shoegaze pop, check out No Medium. Kind of reminds me a lot of Way Is Blood album from last year, which we loved a lot.
So my record I want to talk about is Amaro Prieta's Sankofa. This is a jazz record from a Brazilian pianist, grew up in the slums of Brazil, city Recife, in the northeast of Brazil. This is a record that kind of balances between really beautiful, lush piano leads, grand piano leads, sparse drums, that kind of like thumping methodic bass behind it to kind of walk with you through the music, to really experimental atonal kind of jams within. And it's a really fascinating listen. I've had it on a last couple of mornings as I've kind of gotten my day going, and it does a really good job of kind of easing you in and then kind of getting you set up for things and getting your head kind of shaking and moving for the rest of the day. This record took around 2 years for Prietas to make. He was working with a trio. They spent 8 hours a day, 4 days a week in the studio, just writing, playing, coming up with these songs, and putting them to tape. It's a fascinating listen. This is the type of music that I really, and this is something we'll kind of talk about as we get deeper into this show in the next few episodes. But I'm really thankful for Bandcamp for this. With sends an algorithm, I just get recommended music via Bandcamp that just like challenges me, makes me think about what I want to hear in a very new and unique way. And this record definitely did that for me. So Amaro Prieta's Sankofa. We'll find some way, I don't know exactly how we're going to do it, but we'll find some way to promote these records, probably through Twitter. We'll probably have our social team push this stuff out, but I definitely would encourage all of our listeners to check this out. We also wanted to talk about underappreciated records that have come out this year. We've given you a list of our favorites. We've given you some new records that we're listening to. But we wanted to also kind of highlight a record that we thought was a bit underappreciated at this point in time and definitely deserves your time and attention. Dave, what is your underappreciated record thus far in 2021? Or at this point in time, I should say.
So I have an album by a group called Split Single, and the album is called Amplificado. So Split Single is actually the nom de rock for a guy named Jason Narduzzi, who's probably best known as a sideman. He's plays bass in the live version of Superchunk. He's the bass player in Bob Mould's band. I know he's played bass in Guided by Voices, but Split Single, that's his guitar project where he gets to write the songs and sing and play guitar. And his new record came out, I think it came out about 3 weeks ago. It was actually in the works as far back as 2019, as I found out when he was interviewed on the Vinyl emergency podcast with our buddy Jim Hankey, but obviously COVID seriously put that on hold. So this is a record. It's just really well-produced, joyous, buzzing power pop that it kind of reminds me a lot of R.E.M.'s Accelerate album from 2008, which sort of makes sense in the way because while Jason Narducci, he's the singer and plays guitar, he's got Mike Mills from R.E.M. on bass and backing vocals and on drums, John Worster from Superchunk and from the Bob Mould Band. So there's a lot of chemistry there. And the first single released from this album, Nothing You Can Do to End This Love, which was a very big, open-hearted love letter to the LGBTQ community, is the slightest bit cheesy, but it's such a sunburst down from the heavens that it's probably my favorite single song right now of 2021. It had a really charming video, and there was a period of time where I couldn't listen to the song without kind of tearing up happy tears a bit. So it's just a gorgeous song, excellent chunks of power pop, and if you're like me and you kind of missed the 90s when stuff like this would have been played on MTV's 120 Minutes all the time, I would recommend checking out Amplificado by Split Single.
My pick is Lightning Bugs, A Color of the Sky. This record came out 10 days ago at the time of recording. Lightning Bug is a New York band, kind of indie pop, indie folk, shoegaze, that kind of like New York cool, but with a little bit more atmosphere. They kind of remind me of Wild Pink in a certain sense. They're very delicate. This record is kind of like what I was saying about the Corey Hansen. I mean, stylistically, it's not really the same record at all. But in the sense that when I listen to it, I feel as though if I'm not looking at like the time while I'm listening to it, okay, that song ended. And then I kind of pull my phone out to check what this new song is. But it's like a coda jam that's been tacked on to the previous song. There's a lot of great rising atmospheric kind of blast outs that you get here in the shoegaze style that I'm really digging. I listened to this for the first time. I was on paternity leave for about 2 months, and I spent a lot of time walking my daughter while she would be asleep. I just would walk miles throughout our neighborhood, and I just would blast new records, live shows, what have you, podcasts on my headphones. And I listened to this on one of the walks, and it just like did everything I needed at that moment. It was a great spin, and I've been listening to it a lot. It's another really good morning record. I'm finding like at this point in my life, I'm up a lot, like right as the sun is coming up, which happens to be the case when you have young kids. And listening to this record early in the morning as coffee is slowly kicking in has been fantastic. So I highly recommend this. I feel like it deserves a little bit more attention than it is getting. It is Lightning Bugs, A Color of the Sky.
That is an excellent record. So finally, in terms of records, we want to do classic summer album recommendations. You know, stuff that isn't new, but things that we want to put on when we're out grilling or driving or just soaking up what's hopefully a sunny 82-degree day with a slight breeze. So one that immediately came to mind for me was quite a proto-dad-rock document, you could say. This would be Bruce Hornsby and the Range. Scenes from the South Side, 1988. This is his second record. I mean, you kind of can't go wrong with any of the first five, like Bruce Hornsby records, being The Way It Is, Scenes from the South Side, Night on the Town, Harbor Lights, and then Hot House in 1995, which actually had Jerry Garcia's last recorded guitar solo on it. But of all those five, this is probably my favorite. It's got Look Out Any Window. It's got the awesome synth bass of Valley Road, which they still play on CBS when you're watching the PGA Tour and you see the like leaderboard. So it's like the ultimate dad rock. You can fall asleep on your couch and watch golf in your Bruce Hornsby. It's just extremely synthy, a tiny bit cheesy, but it's just the kind of stuff that I like to blast in the car to make my wife give me strange looks, and my kids are probably listening to their iPad anyway. So, you would not have the War on Drugs without Bruce Hornsby. The Dead 1991 wouldn't be as good as they would have been without Bruce Hornsby. And he made some incredible records. Still does. Look out.
Yeah, this is a great record. I haven't listened to this in a while. This reminds me of being a kid. I'm going to have to blast this. I'm taking a drive here tomorrow, just up north for a little bit, and I'm going to have to blast this during that drive. It sounds fantastic.
Look out any window.
Americana at its best. So this segment, like, will kind of be rotating, like the classic album segment. We're going to kind of have a little kind of gimmick, if you will, that goes along with it. But I was thinking classic. What does classic mean now? And I was thinking, you know, 2015 in some cases feels like it was just yesterday, but it also feels like it was about three decades ago when you think about how much has happened in the last 7 years. And I know you were a very, very new dad in the summer of 2015. I was about to become a new dad. So I think about the summer of 2015 as kind of like the last summer of my extended childhood. Like there's a big window between college and 2015 where I could kind of do what I wanted. I had time. I had a little bit of money, I had freedom, and then I had a kid that changed everything. And a record came out in summer 2015 that was accompanied by one of my favorite music reviews ever by one of my favorite writers, Mark Richardson. And this record, I listened to it on a near daily basis in summer 2015, in the car, while cooking food, while taking runs, while just hanging out. This was a constant, constant record for me. And that was Jamie XX, In Color. It's one of those records, like the album cover continuously fascinates me. It's like the spectrum of the rainbow with this like just white rectangle in the middle of it. And looking at it, it just, I don't know, it always kind of like blows my mind to look at that and hear the opening song, Gosh. This is one of those records that just like fuses electronic music, drum and bass, aspects of hip hop with kind of an indie rock sensibility and songwriting standpoint, and big, big melodies, big choruses, and really just fascinating utilization of technology. It reminds me of Nicholas Jaar in some senses and what Nicholas Jaar is capable of doing, where he makes electronic music, but it doesn't really sound electronic. I love this record. I cannot recommend it enough. I blasted it for the first time since probably last summer in preparation for this episode, as I was kind of seeing what would be good to throw out there. But I highly recommend this. If you trust Dave's and my listening or recommendations here, I think that you would absolutely enjoy this. I think you're a big fan of this record, aren't you?
Yes, it's a great record. I like this record a lot.
Yeah.
And then there was the remix album with Gil Scott-Heron, right?
Yeah, we're new here, I believe, is what it's called, which was great.
Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh. Easy, easy. Hold it down.
All right. Thus concludes our July 12th episode of The Drop. Thank you, everyone, for listening to us. I had a good time, man. This was a little different than what we've done in the past, but it was great to hang out with you on mic. Chit-chat about music.
It's a work in progress, but it's going to be a very worthy work in progress.
I'm excited. I think I hope that you out there got some great recommendations from a podcast standpoint as well as from new music standpoint. We're always here to chat new music with you and hoping that we're able to soundtrack the next week for you here. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Osiris Media, for giving us the opportunity to run The Drop here. We're very excited. And
seriously, thank you to Osiris Media. Thank you for sticking with us for this hour. It's going to be interesting. We got a blank slate and we're going to run with it. And we're going to try to give you all the musical goodness that your little brains can handle, because we don't want you to be myopic, because myopic is bad. So come back in 1 week on July 19th of 2021. We will hold hands and we will go further into The Drop.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effie Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freites from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11. Oh.